I'm Gab, he's Jules. We have cloudy skies in West London, but never fear, because to brighten our day, we have a packed show for you, because so many things happened around Europe, from Juventus and Roma to Ansu Fati's first start for Barcelona to Manchester United losing. There's a shock. So much stuff, but we got to start with Jan-Åge Fjørtoft, because in the Bundesliga, it was first against second. And you know what? Going into this game, I thought, you know, maybe this is a trap game, Jan, for Bayern, because Leverkusen had won a bunch of games in a row. Yeah. I don't think that they only lost once, and that was that crazy cluster mess against Borussia Dortmund. Plus, I thought, you know, the manager, Gerardo Rico, Suave, he's getting things done post-break. And then after 36 minutes, they're 5-0 down at home. And Bayern, and it wasn't Leverkusen being terrible, it was Bayern being ridiculously good and as dominant, I thought, in that first half hour as I've seen them play in the Bundesliga in a long time.
I think that not only that, boys, it was like when they lose against Frankfurt, you always get that feeling, maybe there is a chance that they can lose two games in a row, which Bayern never do, by the way. But there's always this hope that they will do that. And when you come, I was on my way home. I was in Dortmund watching Haaland again doing his stuff. And I was on my way home and I thought, well, I sit down a bit with the family, I say hello and before I go into this game. And then, like you said, it just exploded. I tweeted Bayern 04, because that's their name. And while I was doing this, it was 05. So I agree with you. It was an unbelievable statement, and it's actually a quite sad statement of the Bundesliga, because I've spoken to a lot of the management of the Bundesliga. Of course, if you have a team winning 9 in a row, you need the other teams to get closer to Bayern Munich, and that is nothing to do. That is not Bayern Munich's fault. That's the other team's fault, because Bayern can't get worse. I see on Twitter they say, "Oh yeah, but they take away the big stars from the other clubs." Well, Bayern, that's the name of the jungle. That's what big clubs do. So then you just have to stop selling them those players. So unbelievable performance of Bayern. What a comeback after that bit sad 2-1 loss at home to my Eintracht Frankfurt.
We've been there before in previous seasons against Dortmund last season. We were very excited for the clash coming up, and you say, oh, maybe Dortmund can do it this time. They can finally beat them. And then Leipzig the season before when Nagelsmann was there, and all of that. And in the end, those games are always the same. We are so excited, and we go, oh yes, maybe this is a day where, and then Bayern smashed them. Is there something psychologically in those, when the other teams approach those games against Bayern, especially when it's so close, or when it's first against second, or when there's a lot at stake, and they just can't cope with the pressure, and then Bayern can, because that's what they do.
But effectively, Jules, you're asking, is there something wrong with Bayer Leverkusen? Were they not prepared mentally? Were they intimidated by Bayern? And I know we always say this, yes, of course, the great teams. I don't go for that psychological, metaphysical stuff. I thought this game was Bayern's movement and intensity on the pitch was close to perfect. I mean, they weren't just a little better than last season, or even in the Hansi Flick season when they won everything. I thought they were orders of magnitude better against an opponent that Leverkusen weren't bad in this game. Let's be clear. Leverkusen didn't make one or two mistakes. Am I wrong here, Jan?
Now, I think you both are having it a bit right on what you're saying, because I think it's a mixture of things. Because I think that, first of all, that culture that you got in Bayern, you got that for years and years, you know, continuity and so on and so on. That's a basic thing. And also, when you see the Bayern team now, I think they got a perfect mixture of experienced player, young players, running players, skillful players. I mean, that is one of the best Bayern things I've seen for many, many years. And of course, with Nagelsmann, you have a great manager who can improve them. As you see in RB Leipzig, now maybe going a bit backwards after he's leaving in terms of the system and organization. But I agree with you. The thing is that the movement on the if you see the movement without ball, it's sensational. Because sometimes times. I never played for the best teams in the world. I've never played for teams that dominate games. So that's why I find it so interesting to see these teams dominating. What's the key? And one of the keys is, of course, always when, let's say Kimmich is on the ball, he will always have four or five options to play. If you see the Bayer Leverkusen, maybe on a good day, they have one option. You know, right, so there's right. always option. If you saw, there was times in the first half that Sealer was kind of a striker, and he's a central half. There was like they were just laughing there because he was shooting, he was trying everything. It was like in second half. I mean, you saw the picture of Thomas Müller and Robert Lewandowski sitting on the bench laughing because Sealer is kind of replacement for Robert Lewandowski and he's a right. center half. So the movement and options what they're having right. is sensational.
Okay, guys, maybe it's my obsession with Julian Nagelsmann. Because when we take a step back and we talk about, you know, you look, the technical level of Bayern is obviously extremely high. Kimmich is among the best in the world. Lewandowski is amongst the world, if not the best in the world. Müller is super smart. But when I look at most of the rest, right? We're talking Upamecano, who's just arrived. When Stanisic plays, you know, this is a kid. You know, Goretzka, great player, but we're not talking the second coming of, I don't know, Brian Robson or whoever you want to mention, right? In fact, a little exercise. Were we to go player for player, one for one, in terms of individual quality, I'm not sure this team is that far off Manchester United. If you're talking just players, to mention a random team. They're better, but I don't know. No, they're not orders of magnitude better, right? I'm sorry, Jules, you're shaking your head.
No. I'm just thinking.
Varane, Upamecano, if I go Pogba, Goretzka, it's not.
Yeah.
If I go Sancho, Sané, Leroy Sané's a lot better this year.
This is the whole thing about
but
this game.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. This is the team, right?
This is a collective strength that is out of this world.
Yeah. This is a better run club already before they got there. They're settled. They were already on a pathway. But it seems to me that Nagelsmann's made them better. Now, what I wonder, and I want to throw this to you, Jan, as somebody who followed Leipzig while Nagelsmann was there, I had the impression that at the beginning, you had a lot of games where they really pressed with this level of intensity and ferocity all the time. And then I felt that over his last two seasons at Leipzig, Nagelsmann decided to, even while still doing a lot of rotation and players in and out, which he probably can't do at Bayern to the same level.
Or doesn't need to.
Sorry?
Or doesn't need to.
Well, no, I think you do need to because you cannot play like this every game. You cannot because your players' legs are going to fall off, right? What I thought was impressive was Nagelsmann, I think, has been, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's kind of been on a journey where the last year and a half or 2 years at Leipzig, they pressed in moments, or they pressed in certain games against certain opponents when they needed to, or they rotated. And what I'm wondering, I think we can see some rotation from Bayern. I don't know how much more rotation we can see, because I do think that there is, while they're deeper than they were, you know, than some people think they are, there is still a drop-off. Are we going to see maybe this team play like this when they need to, and other times perhaps take their foot off the gas, pace themselves a little bit, because they want to go till the end in all competitions. And, you know, it's still a numbers game, right? In midfield, get past the two starters, and it's Sabitzer and Tolisso, who's always hurt and out of contract. And you have this situation recurring in different areas. What's your take on that?
Well, first of all, I followed Nagelsmann since he was a youth team coach in Hoffenheim, and everybody spoke how good he was. But I think that the main thing with Julian Nagelsmann, I've had the pleasure to interview him deeply some weeks ago, and what impressed me was the kind of security he got, the confidence he got, but also the confidence to not be confident. When we talked about him coming into the dressing room and he had to adjust at Bayern with all the people who won the trophies. And I think that it seems that his management, his leadership has developed. And why do I say that when we talk about his tactical moves? I think that is a lot to do with it, because he is confident to make what you're saying. Yeah, because a lot of people find that have been undefined to say that you can take on and off the gas. because that is so hard to understand. How do these teams do that? You see that, I remember back in the days when Rosenborg Trondheim were in the Champions League and their first half against Real Madrid, it was like a 1-1. And I said on TV, well, just in second half, Real Madrid will just speed up a bit and then they'll win the game. And people said, no, people can't do that. Well, they can. I mean, the world-class players can. The world-class team can do that. But I think it's also the thing that his way of thinking, he's adjusting to the players he got. At the end, that in Leipzig, there was not a honeymoon for him. There were a lot of criticism as well because they didn't like all that rotation thing that he was doing, especially the strikers. The strikers need confidence. A striker need to play. A striker need to have that goal that comes from nowhere to keep your confidence. But it seems now at Bayern, he has changed a bit around that. But the intensity of the team, it's also, it seems that the Bayern team fits more to his philosophy. And his philosophy, we can say, well, it's a philosophy of Nagelsmann. But Julian Nagelsmann didn't invent the success at Bayern. He is kind of has to improve it, to develop it. And as far as I see now, I was one of the ones. I'm a neutral. I would like the Bundesliga to be tight. I would like to have other teams challenge for the title. I hope that Nagelsmann would have problem at Bayern. But it's the total opposite. He has managed. Even that we are a big fan of Hansi Flick and all he's doing in and around the team, but he has improved the team on the pitch. And I think that statement against Bayer Leverkusen, that was the exam. That was the papers he need. Well, he has improved that team, and he has improved that team so that we'll take off Bayern now, put Bayern in there also in the Champions League, because the two titles in Germany, they will probably win, well, you know, in Anführungszeichen, quote, easy.
We wondered when he signed, didn't he, for the money they paid, how will he adapt? Can he deal with the dressing room? Kind of the egos, although this is, as we said, such a collective team that maybe that dressing room is not too difficult to manage and to deal with. But for him to say after the game on yesterday, this was perfection. This first half was, for someone so demanding, who's been there 2 days, for him to say this was perfect, that first half was just perfect, to take off Alphonso Davies after 40 minutes because you're already 5-0 up and you can just rest him after he played 100 games in the international break, it's just, I just think it's unreal. And what's next now is to not take their eyes off the ball like they did against Frankfurt, to make sure that the Frankfurt accident doesn't happen again? Is it to play like this more against, regardless the opposition, not just in the top games?
You can't play like this.
But you can. You can. If you phone it up after 20, they play 30 minutes. Don't tell me they can't play 30 minutes like that every game, and then you manage the rest of the game.
They're not going to be 4-0 up after 30 minutes in every game because, you know, we as great as they were in creating the chances, and Jan, you're a striker, correct me if I'm wrong, right? What Lewandowski did for the first goal with the movement, you can't expect Lewandowski to do it with every single chance. The Muller goal that comes off his thigh, that's dumb luck. You can't to go out there and play like this out games in half an hour.
No, okay. But you make it sound like they played for 90 minutes at such a high intensity that
I agree with you. They dialed it down. But I'm just really curious to see how he does it. I think what he's going to do is keeping the same players against certain oppositions in certain games when they have certain fixtures coming up. And bear in mind, they're already practically qualified in the Champions League after two games. So maybe midweek is where we see, you know, more of your pal Choupo-Moting, the semifinal hero. We'll see more things like that going forward.
Yeah,
Can I get you on Leverkusen? Because, again, maybe I was fooling myself a little bit.
No, it's just...
Well, can we hear Jan? Are Leverkusen good? How good are they? Can they challenge for the title? Or are they the second force?
Well, they are second force, but all other teams than Bayern are second force in Germany. It was quite interesting in Dortmund now. I talked to Marco Rose after the game. I congratulated him to the record. He's the first Dortmund coach who's won his first 5 home games as a coach. And I've seen all games. They could have lost 3 of them. And then you can see, is that a positive thing or a negative thing? Because it's not typical Dortmund to kind of get 3 points there. But you should have seen the anxious players at the end of this game on Saturday. It was the same against Hoffenheim. And the reason I'm talking about Dortmund, because I would put Dortmund and Leverkusen in the same bucket, so to say. I don't think they've got it. I think if you see the team that Dortmund ended that game, and now how many of these players will get into the Bayern squad? And I'm honest now. How many will get into the first 12, 13? I think you have to ask yourself that.
They have a lot of injuries too, to be fair.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. They've got a lot of injuries, but still conceding goals for fun. It's a one clean sheet this season for Dortmund. And Leverkusen, I think that the project Leverkusen at the moment, I salute that. I think that is brilliant what Simon Rolfes and the new boys and the new kids on the block try to do. Exciting player, Florian Wirtz, Schick, and so on and so on. I think they will be up there. Will they be close to Bayern? Unfortunately not. Will Bayern in February lead the league with 12, 13 points? Yes, they will. Unfortunately, because this is very bad for the brand Bundesliga. How can you sell a league where one team A, win everything, B, buy all the superstars, and just sit calm now, because when they now attack for Haaland, it's going to be a big, big thing going on in the German Bundesliga. And hopefully for the neutrals, Lewandowski will be so mad that he will stop scoring and maybe we get closer to each other.
Or maybe Lewandowski will go home to Dortmund.
Do you think for Leverkusen, psychologically, to be destroyed like this in 35 minutes can have an impact, can have an effect on the next few games, or they can say to themselves, listen, we won the second half 1-0, so hey, not all bad? Or do you think that mentally you're hurt, you're so much hurt that you might struggle?
It's good, Jules, because there is another way as well. Like Eintracht Frankfurt won away at Bayern, yeah, and then they're losing at home to Hertha Berlin.
That's true.
And the stats show that when any team beat Bayern, then they go into a depression. It's unbelievable, the stats. I saw some stats now when I went home on Sunday. But Leverkusen, I think that Leverkusen, they are strong enough. They will bounce back. There's going to be an unbelievable race of those second, third place. Hopefully RB Leipzig can be back. Could Gladbach be up there? But I think that Leverkusen are there to stay. I think that when you have those kind of games, you just want to get on there again. And I think I got a very good impression of this new coach. I think he's, but we have said that before in Leverkusen, he's a perfect coach for them. But I think he brings a bit winning mentality, a bit international kind of thing into Leverkusen. And they need that because sometimes they are a bit too predictable in doing everything right, but they need that colorful thing. So I think Leverkusen will bounce back straight away.
Yeah, I just think it's impressive how he's gone from, gone from his musical career into his coaching career. I just think it's huge. Okay, Jan, before we let you go, we need to take advantage of the fact that you're here and ask you about your friends who eat the lutefisk, in other words, your Norwegian countrymen. Starting with Erling Haaland, it was his first game back. Obviously, he looked like a kid, which he is a kid. You know the penalty he won? Okay, to me, that was actually the coolest thing he did in the game, because that little juggling, that little movement, that little control, people his size shouldn't be doing that. They shouldn't be able to do that unless their name is Zlatan.
Yeah.
Can you describe that? Just as a center forward yourself, because look, one thing we've learned being around professionals, even center forwards who we say, oh, look, they're not super technically gifted, they can probably do that in training, but they wouldn't think to do that in the game, would they? Am I wrong here, Jan?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that is the amazing thing about him, the balance in his game, how he's been able. I don't think his dad liked too much to this Zlatan thing, because I think that would give him extra jobs. But again, as you're saying, suddenly out of nowhere, he's doing those kind of things. He's so great with the ball. He can do things like that all the time. And he makes things that is difficult look so easy. I mean, a fan looking at that third goal, that in 94th minute when Jude Bellingham doing a fantastic job on the left side and give him the ball, and everybody said, yeah, but he was all on his own on the 18-yard box. Well, yeah, he was all on his own, but still you got to score. Still you have to make it that easy. And I think that, yes, he got a technical ability, he got the strength, but I think he's go back to his mental shape. And after the game, Dortmund let me say, yeah, you can have Haaland, but I need to be close to the tunnel because you never know where he will go after the game. So I was standing with the tunnel. And then he came off, and it was amazing, boys. You should have seen that. I don't talk football with my wife, but I had to talk football with my wife when I came back because I had to share it with someone. Because it was like he was in his own world. He was like all the people said, Erling Haaland, Erling Haaland. It was like in a zombie kind of thing. He was just like, so I said to him, I said in Norwegian, you're gonna go over with no one doing an interview. And I was like, okay. And then we went over. I said, we're gonna go over there. And I was thinking of those minutes and when we started the interviews, I was thinking this is the main strength, because he managed to be in his own kind of world, at the same being inspired by all the people around him in the stadium. And rightly so, Sebastian Kehl said before the game, this is the main reason we hope that we can get him to stay. We don't believe that, but still, this is the main selling points, because he's getting unbelievable and inspired by the fans in the stadium, the yellow wall and everything. And then he comes up with those technical stuff, but in the same thing, you see his eyes, it's like a lion in the jungle. It's just it's more or less, you can't even see his eyes. He's so focused. And that also for a former striker, when I saw him, yes, I went off. I was some happy days when I've scored a winner in the last minute, but I was never a zombie. He was unbelievable. And I think this is the main strength to his game.
We were going to ask you about Solskjaer, carrot and stick. Obviously, it's not a question of sacking, but I just want to ask you one thing, whether you have any insight as a striker or on how his mind works, just because one thing that Jules and I have repeated over and over and over and over again is that if you drop Cristiano into this squad at his age and the way he's been playing the last couple of years, and you ask him to play center forward, it's problematic. It's difficult for him because then you can't press and whatever, yeah, and he gets kicked. And
they didn't,
you know, he'll still score a million goals because he's Cristiano, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, you don't get the best out of him. You have to create the team for Cristiano. Obviously, Solskjaer was a top-class striker. Does he not see that? Do you think does he really believe this is the answer? That this is Cristiano, he's a center forward, and everybody else should get him the ball in that way?
Well, first of all, do I want my former teammate to do well at Manchester United?
Of course.
Still being a journalist? The answer is yes. And I've said all along, and we've seen that now, I think. And what you're asking about is like the total situation, because you're true. If you get Cristiano Ronaldo there, it's all about Cristiano Ronaldo. You have to find a way to keep him happy there. And I'm happy is winning games and him scoring goals for all that. I think that Ole Gunnar went, and I've said this before, but I will say it again because that is what I feel, that Ole Gunnar went to bed happy that he got Cristiano Ronaldo and woke up next morning and thinking, well, I have to win games. I have to play him all the time. They will talk about Cristiano Ronaldo. So he had maybe a good night's sleep and it started well. He scored all the goals. But now Cristiano Ronaldo wasn't on the pitch either. I couldn't see him against Leicester. He didn't do a lot and all that. But I think that, yes, the problem is Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, you want him to score goals. But I think the main problem now for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is that it's difficult to see how he wants to play. And if you don't have a defined way of playing, it's also difficult to find the role of a Cristiano Ronaldo, because he is so significant. He'll take so much space on a pitch, or you don't understand what I'm trying to say, that he need to be in there somehow. And I think that Cristiano Ronaldo, very, very good for Manchester United, but that could end up being the big, big problem. And I say it in a positive way for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, because he needs to score goals. He needs to win titles.
Does he seem, over the past month or so, you know, before, whether United won or lost, he was always very measured. He played up kind of to our stereotype of those nice Scandinavian people who never get angry. And then I kind of feel like in the past month, when when he was answering questions, you know, when he said, I only listen to people I respect. And then when he talked about how, well, Cristiano, when he left Cristiano out and so on, we know, but you don't know. And when he complained about the referees, was it against the Young Boys game?
I mean,
I don't know Ole as well as you do, obviously, but it seems to me that this is different from the public image that we were seeing before. Is it the screws are turning, or is it also that maybe somebody suggested to me, Ole said, like, you know what, maybe I don't want to play Mr. Nice Guy in public, even though I am in real life. Maybe I want to show a little bit of edge, a little bit of fight, a little bit of nasty to try to get my team to be better.
Well, I had a quite strict coach called Felix Magath, and one of the
Mr. Unpleasant. He's the opposite of Ole.
And that's why. But he always said, he quoted, he was always saying that your strength is always like kind of a relative to one weakness, you know. So the strength of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer being in the dressing room, being the leader of the project, being the Manchester United, restore the image of Manchester United, that is a strength. But then you see that maybe Mr. Nice Guy could be a problem when you're losing football games. And if you see the public debate in and around Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, is those kind of stereotypes. After games, he's smiling. You can't smile when you're losing. You should take people out of the game. You shouldn't have a meeting with all your coaching staff just to make one substitution. And I think that, yes, maybe he's getting a bit frustrated, of course. He can see that it could be the start of the ending, so to say. But on the other hand, Ole Gunnar, this is Ole Gunnar mentality. I can only guess that Ole Gunnar is thinking, you know, well, I got 2 years as a Manchester United coach. I got a long-term contract here. What's the worst that can happen to me? Well, I get fired. I get paid out. I will live in Norway, which is not bad. So Ole Gunnar is as calm as he looks. Of course, as anybody else, he will be frustrated. He will kind of think that his public image, he's that kind of guy. But I think that sometimes you see how he is. I see the players like to say that he is tougher in the dressing room. I think they feel they have to say that. But Ole Gunnar will never change his personality. He is, but no mistakes. He scored so many goals in his football career. And he's a Manchester United manager. You can't do that just to be Mr. Nice Guy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Bayern. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester United fall to Leicester City 4-2. Jules, more than the result, this was a really, really bad performance.
It was, although at 2-2, you could easily have thought, okay, they're going to close that game even playing badly.
And I thought the story would have been Mason Greenwood and his great goal.
Exactly, and Rashford's coming back and scoring on his return and all of that. And we've seen those games away from home when they had this incredible run until Saturday where they didn't play well, but they still got either a point or win the game in the 95th minute or whatever. Not this time. And it's the same problem again. With the ball, it was poor. Cristiano was poor because he got no service. There was no press whatsoever. And when you let a team like Leicester having the ball and you don't press them, but they press you and they get the ball back too easily because Harry Maguire should never play in this game. Never. I don't care if Solskjaer says to him, hey, we need you. You have to come back after just one training session. If you're Harry Maguire, you say to the, you say, coach, you know what? I would love to play. And I know you need me because Varane is also out. But I cannot play. I'm not ready mentally, psychologically, physically to play this game.
You need to explain this to me, okay? Because we raised this question on the FC show. And my attitude is we in the media, you know, this is what we do. We give our opinions. We analyze what we see on television. We're not there at the training ground. We can only see. So with hindsight, we can see Maguire was terrible. By the way, Maguire has also been terrible in certain games when he's been fully fit, right? It's not like,
of course.
I just want to be clear. I like the guy. He has a big head. He's a good leader. Seems like a nice guy. He's good on the ball. But we're not talking about Bobby Moore and Franz Beckenbauer rolled into one. So let's be very, very clear about that. But I'm assuming Manchester United have a whole medical staff and sports science. They just come back from international break. I'm assuming there was nobody at Old Trafford other than Harry Maguire, and they're spending all day with him. So I have to put my faith that he's ready to play.
But he's clearly not. Otherwise, he doesn't put up that performance.
But those weren't physical mistakes. Those were mental mistakes. The Iheanacho thing.
Yeah. I don't think he judges the ball well. But I just don't think he's ready to play. I don't think he's not 100% physically. Gabby's trained once since the injury. You can't be physically 100% when you've trained once on Friday. And then you play a game like this against Jamie Vardy. Listen, Jamie Vardy scores a goal. There are three Leicester players against seven United players in that box. So regardless of Maguire's mistake or not, he should never concede that kind of goals anyway. But I just think that decision to play him was crazy. And maybe he should have said to Solskjaer, I'm not ready to play. Don't play me. Play someone else. I'm like, okay, Eric Bailly, you, me, Solskjaer himself. Next play Mike Phelan at the back if you want.
Next round of games is Atalanta, home and away in the Champions League, Liverpool, Spurs, Watford, and City.
Yeah. That's a big good luck.
You know what? I'm pretty sure Solskjaer will still be there at the end of that.
It will be. Of course it will be. Results. But what if they don't win any of those? What if they lose them all?
I think Solskjaer's going to go once the Glazers convince themselves, oh, look, we might not get in the Champions League unless we make a change. And they're not in that situation in October, definitely not.
Meanwhile, United were also hammered, Gav, for choosing to make the 100-mile journey to Leicester by plane, which was a 10-minute flight. I didn't even think that flights could last 10 minutes, but that you were allowed, but, you know. Instead of taking the train or the bus, there were problems on the motorway, apparently. This, PR-wise, I mean, everything-wise, this is bad.
This is really bad. Obviously, people are going to go and hammer them because of their carbon footprint commitments, whatever else. Yeah. They have other PR consultants. I seriously doubt it was Solskjaer who said, yeah, we have to do this because otherwise it's going to screw up my game plan. I think this was a decision that's not on the football side. It was a decision on the other side, and they should have stepped in, and this is on them. Mm. Paris Saint-Germain won way back on Friday night, coming from behind to beat Angers thanks to a late Kylian Mbappe penalty.
Dodgy pen.
But Jules, it's events off the pitch that have dominated headlines, and for once, they have nothing to do with Mbappe's future or Neymar's sister's birthday party. Yes, we're going old school. Vandanara and Mauro Icardi.
Oh, yes. We love this story. Well, no, we don't live it so much because this is what happened on Saturday. Vandanara, who is Mauro Icardi's girlfriend, I mean, long-term partner. And his agent.
And the mother of two of his children.
And the mother of their two daughters, that's right, put out a message on Instagram saying, another family that you ruined because of a... you know, the B.
By the way, the family that he ruined before, supposedly, was, of course,
Honda
her family.
And Maxi
because
Lopez.
For those who don't know, for those who are too young, she was with Maxi Lopez,
indeed,
who was Icardi's teammate
and friend.
And friend. And then they got together, and then Icardi posted pictures of him, like, assembling toys with Maxi's three kids.
Yeah.
Just not good.
Not good. And then Wanda deletes all the photos on Instagram or her Instagram with...
She unfollowed him.
With him, and she unfollowed him. So we go like, oh my God, he misses training on Sunday because he goes back to Milan to try to sort out his marriage. In the end, what looks like is that they've made up.
Because they posted a picture of them together.
A very loving photo together. He will be in the squad for the Leipzig game on Tuesday. And supposedly she's going to be back in Paris soon with all the children. But, you know, one of those stories are just like, you know, the gossip pages more than anything else. Four wins in a row for Juventus, who beat Roma 1-0 on Sunday night in the big Serie A game. But Gab Jose Mourinho was grumpy at the end, and he has reason to be, right?
So it's funny because he was grumpy. On the pitch, he's like high-fiving Allegri and stuff, and he's taking it well. Yeah. But you know inside he was furious. And I think with good reason. Roma missed a penalty in this game, and it was a penalty which probably should have been a goal, at least because Tammy Abraham, who was outstanding, he loses the ball on a tackle. It goes to Mkhitaryan. Mkhitaryan gets brought down by Szczęsny. The ball rolls back to Abraham.
Yeah, but it rolls back half a second later. I don't know why.
In the meantime, the referee whistled for a foul. They came up with all these explanations. Says, oh, but look, when Mkhitaryan's falling, the ball touches his hand. Like, no, come on, man.
No, that's a huge mistake by such an experienced referee.
I think not a good performance. This whole like, oh, we defended stoutly, line. And they were lucky too, because Moise Kean scored the opening goal. If you get to see the video, it's kind of funny.
It's brilliant.
The ball comes in, Bentancur heads it back, heads it into Moise Kean's head, and it bounces off.
He knows nothing
of the
about it, completely.
Liverpool destroy Watford 5-0 away to ruin Claudio Ranieri's debut as Roberto Firmino gets a hat-trick, and folks in England ask themselves seriously whether Mohamed Salah is the best player in the world right now. Jules, I know you want to celebrate this.
Just because, one, it was an incredible performance from Liverpool overall and from Mo Salah. The assist for Sadio Mane in the early goal with the outside of his left foot is just, the bend on it is incredible. Then there's this goal. I mean, the guy is running his own goal of the season competition where only him can participate, only him can enter, because between the City one and this one were quite similar in by essence. It's hard to pick. It was just outstanding. And Klopp says he's the best in the world. He's not going to win the Ballon d'Or, but maybe right now he's certainly at a level that is pretty, pretty exceptional. So good on him, good on Liverpool, who are very, very impressive and still unbeaten, the only team in England. Manchester City defeat Burnley 2-0. But Gab, with his contract winding down, let's talk about Raheem Sterling and his future. He wants to come to France, you know.
He's dying. He wants to go to Paris Saint-Germain.
But
what I find really interesting about him, obviously last week he talked about, you know, his contract expires in 2023. Last week he talked about how, you know, he wants to play more. Pep Guardiola's answer is everybody wants to play more.
Yeah, I can't guarantee anything.
If you're unhappy that you don't play more, maybe you should be happy and do what's right for you and your family. Just kind of like don't let the door hit you on the way out. He's 26 years old. I think this is very simple, right? For City to extend him, it means giving him a big contract, like De Bruyne-type money, extending him into his 30s. And with Grealish coming in, with Foden emerging, you're not going to do that. It just wouldn't make any sense to do that. So he either reinvents himself at center forward. He started center forward in this game, played 45 minutes. I don't think he played particularly well.
No.
He's actually played more minutes at center forward this season than he has on the wing.
Which is maybe an indication.
It's an indication. If you want to stay, you got to be center forward. And look, is it so bad being center forward playing for Man City?
I don't think so.
It doesn't seem like a bad game.
Maybe his desire to go to France is too much to turn down.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, Jules, we haven't had enough, so more quick hits.
Yes.
Barcelona begin Clásico week on the right foot as Ansu Fati makes his first start since his injury, scores a great goal, and they go on to beat Valencia 3-1. Jules, we even got to see Sergiño Dest play as a winger. Ronald Koeman has been vindicated in your eyes, right? Say his name. Say his name.
No, thank you. The Dutch guy, okay, they won against a team that didn't win for four games before that. Let's not forget, please. And they were 1-0 down. Let's not forget that.
And Soler should have made it, could have had it too.
And I think Ter Stegen was man of the match, which again...
penalty they won was a little bit...
But they won. It's good on Ansu Fati's coming back. That goal he scored is fantastic. Memphis looked great. And the relationship between Ansu and Memphis looks very good too, which is good before El Clásico. But...
Right.
You know, don't
shout out to Coutinho too, back on the score sheet. One of the good guys.
For the first time in 18 months or something like that. And Barcelona, Gab, also held their general meeting before the game and it didn't go well at all. Only 714 out of the more than 4,500 members actually who can vote turned up, showed up. And it all takes so long that they don't even actually have time to vote. And why is this a big deal?
Okay, this is where I struggle with Barcelona fans. Please don't take it seriously. But when I get the whole the institution, Miskun Club, we're so proud.
Socios and everything.
Why don't you show up? Right? These aren't the normal members. So for elections, you've got the normal members voting. These are sort of like super members who vote.
Special members.
714 out of 4,500. What, were you all on holiday? What? What's going on here?
Traffic.
And the impact of this, I don't know what they did during the meeting because everything ran long. The two things that they failed to vote on. One is they had to approve a big loan to restructure the Camp Nou. It never got to a vote. Okay, maybe you can debate that. But the other thing is they didn't vote on this thing called Article 67, which says the board has to resign if they register 2 years of consecutive losses. Well, hello, newsflash. Why did you vote Laporte in? They're going to register 2 years of consecutive losses.
Exactly.
It's practically impossible for them not to do it.
Yeah.
It's almost not his fault. So that was poor. I'd love to know why these guys didn't show up.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Tottenham Hotspur win 3-2 at Newcastle United. Harry Kane scores. First Premier League goal of the season. Eric Dier does something goofy.
Yeah.
Is normality returning? Yeah, as far as Spurs are concerned.
It was quite Spursy. And I mean, let's not talk about Eric Dier's defending on the first goal by Callum Wilson either. But
he lived up to his last name.
Yeah, exactly. But Kane scores. And I think Eric Dier and Sergio Reguilón did something far better, certainly than what they defended on the pitch, which helping this fan in the stands who had a heart attack. And alerting the referee and everybody and the defibrillator.
Kind of weird that there's 52,000 Geordies in the stadium and like the people who stop the game are like two visiting players.
Well, so I think the medics, the paramedics are already with the fan when Reguilón and
But you saw the dude run across the pitch with
a
defibrillator.
Maybe on the bench because it's the opposite side of the pitch. I don't think they had seen it on the bench where the defibrillator was.
I don't know.
But anyway, it was
good.
Really
good outcome. The fan is stable.
Yeah, very good, and good win for Nuno, and I think he needed that. And Kane needed that goal too. Speaking of Newcastle, there was huge anticipation, of course, before kickoff, but disappointment in the end, and calls for Steve Bruce to be fired. Why is he still there? And it's just, please tell me, it's just a matter of days now. I mean, they get the thousands, whatever.
I like to think it was his 1,000th game, and they wanted him to enjoy it, which obviously he didn't because they lost. But this is the thing. So what I've been told, what many have reported, not just me, is that he's got this massive payoff coming.
Where it does.
Part of the deal he struck with Ashley, it's I think £7.5 million pounds that's owed to him if he resigns or is fired. Here's the thing, and this is why I think Newcastle might actually be run like a business and not just waste money. If money's no object now because the owners are so wealthy, supposedly, then why not just pay this money and make this man go away? I think the answer is they're being smart about it. They're running it like a business. And so you're going to wait a little while longer for them to make the right decision, which I think is the right thing.
Okay.
Well, you disagree.
But like, what? Wait longer for what? What? For him to become good? He's not going to become good now at his age.
So no, but wait longer to appoint the right director of football and then appoint the right manager.
Okay.
That's the process.
Yeah.
I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt on that one.
Okay.
Edouard Mendy has to conjure up multiple miracles to save Chelsea, who somehow beat Brentford 1-0. Jules, you were there. Was this Chelsea being good, being bad, or Brentford being a lot better than some people realize?
A bit of both. I mean, Chelsea won, and as they all said after the game, Tuchel, Mendy that I spoke to, so you don't play well, but you win those games, you show character, and you win it by fighting hard, and that's what they did. And good on them. But for the rest, Brentford were really good at times, not through the whole game, but at times. They hit the woodwork three times. They easily deserved the draw.
They deserved a win, a draw.
Yeah,
they deserved a win.
Yeah,
at least I don't even going to refer you to the expected goals on that one.
No, exactly. Napoli continue their perfect start to the season, making 8 wins out of 8 games after their victory against Torino. And it's another winner for Victor Osimhen. Come on, please do it.
The best
is
yet to come. It's right now. 8 wins out of 8. They were flying. Insigne missed a penalty. They hit the woodwork.
He jumped so high. Unreal.
He's unbelievable, man. He's unbelievable. Erling Haaland returned for Borussia Dortmund against Mainz. Marco Rosa ditch the diamond
for
4-3-3 and they win 3-1. It's really that simple, right, Jules?
We told you, Marco. We told you ages ago, please drop that diamond. It doesn't work out. And then Haaland comes back. They still concede a goal, of course. They can't.
Complicating things at the end.
He scores two. Well done to them. Milan go 2 goals down at home against Verona and then come back to win 3-2 in dramatic fashion. They stay second, only 2 points behind Napoli. Gab, was this deserved or they were a bit lucky? They were a bit lucky.
I don't think so. In the first half, Verona played really well. Milan have like 10 guys out, okay?
Yeah,
including your boy, Mike Maignan, between the sticks. But they kept at it. They were 2-0 down. They pushed, they huffed and puffed. They brought on the heavy artillery, Olivier Giroud and Zlatan together.
Yes.
And it worked, and they got their just rewards. 3-2 win, second place.
How about some love for La Real?
Oh,
Real
yes.
Sociedad go down to 10 men, but they still score an injury time to beat Mallorca 1-0, and they are, for now anyway, top of La Liga.
They are, and it's incredible. It was a special night because they showed the Copa del Rey trophy to the fans. It was a full stadium for the first time. So, and then for most of the game, it looked like it was not going to be their night. This is a game that you want to win because you can go top, but also because of all the celebration and everything. And then 90th minute, Lobete scores a goal. And from a young player, again, the story, the crowd erupting, the stadium, it was just brilliant. It was brilliant. And as we've said before, they've done this with no David Silva for most of the season, for example. They've had a lot of injuries. And yet they're right up there. They play some lovely stuff, lovely football. It's such an amazing story, refreshing story that let's
hope it
continues.
Isak was out too, that he came back.
Yeah, exactly. You remember that day Oyarzabal missed that penalty and they could have even been better for them. So, hey, they took advantage of the fact that neither of the Madrid teams played this weekend to be top of La Liga. And that's really good for them. Gab, there was a super nervy game between Lazio and Inter on Saturday. Lazio won 3-1. There were some wild scenes at the end between Joaquin Correa and Luis Felipe. I mean, I love that, but I'm thinking like, what on earth could have gone through Luis Felipe's head to jump on Correa the way he did after winning that game?
So, Luis Felipe and Joaquin Correa are really, really tight. Correa obviously played for Lazio last year. They're really good friends. They go to their families. They go on holiday together. And so he just decides at the end to go and just give him a massive bear hug from behind.
Jumping on him.
And I suppose to him it was like friendly bants. To Correa, it's like, man, I'm angry. We just lost a really nervy game. We had taken the lead. We complained a lot about the Felipe Anderson goal earlier because, I mean, I thought they were completely wrong because, you know, for those who missed it, Di Marco goes down, the whole put the ball out of play thing, but there's an advantage for Inter. They actually go. They take a shot on goal with Lautaro, and then the ball goes up to the other end, and you're complaining that Lazio doesn't put it out. Well, I'm sorry.
You could have put it out before. Right? Exactly.
But it was sweet. Luis Felipe was in tears
he
afterwards.
He was crying.
And he said, you know, he's my close friend, and now I got myself in trouble, and I got a suspension. I love it. People care so much.
I know.
Both showed each other a lot of love on Instagram. It was the wrong thing at the wrong time. Let's move on. Nothing to see here other than the
could
fact
could the record be rescinded, do you think?
I don't think it will because it's still incorrect.
Yeah,
you don't do that, right?
Yeah.
And it did lead to like a mini brawl at the end. But more importantly, if you're Inzaghi, you get a little concerned here. Obviously, there were players missing, but you know you can't let games like this slip away. You have to be able to at least show me something more. And the gap with the top is now 7 points.
Seven.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Now, in that Inter game, Ivan Perisic gave into the lead, converting a penalty, and he made history. I didn't realize this. He became the first Serie A player since Opta started gathering stats way back in 2004, I think, to convert a spot kick, both right-footed and left-footed. He'd always taken them left-footed before, even though supposedly he's right-footed.
Yeah.
This is kind of a big deal. You're the techers guy here. Can you explain...
I just love it. I think if you've got this ability, which is pretty incredible, even at the top level, trust me, not everybody can score pens with his right foot and his left foot and take them well, I mean. Do it, because then the keeper doesn't know if you're going to shoot right foot, left foot, maybe he's watched your penalties with his right foot and where you tend to, you know, what the pattern is and where you tend to take them. Then it's completely unsettling, I think. It's great. I think Ousmane Dembele doing it at Rennes. Santi Cazorla famously used to take corners in swinging right foot, left foot.
Yeah, I get that, but if it's a corner kick.
But you off air, you said to me about Andres Bremer taking free kicks right foot and left foot.
Andy Bremer, far cooler. He did something which, you know, I don't think anybody else in the history of the game has ever done or will ever do. He scored two free kicks in the same game, one left-footed, one right-footed. And he later explained he's more accurate with one foot and he's more powerful with the other, which just blew my mind.
I think it's incredible. I just, you know, well done to Price. I love this kind of stuff. Somebody didn't give David Moyes and West Ham respect last season, but Gab, they beat Everton 1-0 away and are again in sixth place this season. And the goal was scored by your boy, avenging Angelo Ogbonna.
Just call him Angelo Ogbonna.
His face is so sweet.
Just touch his face before you know, leave.
Imagine a dinner with N'Golo Kanté and Angelo. Like the two nicest guys you could find in football.
I know. The one difference. Angelo Ogbonna, a very, very snappy dresser.
Yes,
I don't want to diss
N'Golo.
I know you're seeing him in a couple hours. N'Golo Kanté, I think, much more low-key, right?
Very much.
Does he ever not wear trackies?
Very much so. No. Very much low-key.
Lucas Paqueta shines as Lyon beat Monaco 2-0. Jules, it's pretty remarkable. Not just because it was the Paquet who shined.
Yeah.
But for one other reason.
Because he was playing with Brazil on Friday morning, pretty much. Because, as we all know, those games in Copenball finished really late. He came back. They didn't know what to do. Can he play? Can he not play? It's very risky, Peter Bosch explained after the game. So he went on the bench. And when it was 0-0, Bosch said, you know what? Let's give him 20 minutes. And he changed the game. Literally. I mean, it was amazing to watch. And I know Paqueta was not a huge success when he was with you in Italy and Milan. But for us, what he's doing, and if you haven't seen it, go and check the second goal from Lyon because he's no look pass. He's just an absolute beauty. He's been incredible for Lyon.
To clarify, obviously, they played in Manaus, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he didn't fly from Manaus, Sao Paulo, Frankfurt, took the train to Paris and then down to Lyon. I mean, I'm assuming
there was a private jet for him. Yeah, of course. There was,
and not just for him, right? But
Bruno Guimaraes was there too. I don't know if they came back with Neymar.
Well, I was wondering, did the Paris Saint-Germain guys not allow them on the...
Not like the Premier League association, if you want. but still, and, you know, people say, yeah, but at that level, they can play two games in 2 days. Well, not really. That's why it was a big risk. And I think Lyon are happy they took it, but they're also happy that he came out unhurt. So well done to them. Reports in Spain suggest that Real Madrid are being linked with Liverpool transfer guru Michael Edwards. Gab, does this make sense to you?
Well, for those who don't know, he's the guy who he kind of helped revolutionize Liverpool's recruitment. He's a go-between the analytics guys and the scouts and the manager. He's kind of the hub. He's got this ability to speak to everybody, get deals done at the right price. And he's leaving at the end of the season. And it's not really clear why he's leaving. Yeah. Is he going somewhere else? I think it's a slightly underreported story because I think this is a really, really big deal for Liverpool. He doesn't seem to be a fit at Real Madrid. I mean, directors of football in general don't always seem to be a great fit at Real Madrid. I don't know. I'd love it to be true that maybe Real Madrid are going a different direction or whatever, but Real Madrid have a pretty settled business model and they've done relatively well doing things the way they've done it in the past. Yeah. I don't see this, but I hope we see him again in football because he's obviously a very bright guy. More reports from Spain. They suggest Arsenal are monitoring Luka Jovic as a possible replacement for Alexandre Lacazette, who, of course, is out of contract June. Would it be a good idea, Jules?
I think I like Luka Jovic. I've always liked him. Certainly in Germany with Frankfurt, he was very good. Not so much, of course, at Real Madrid. And maybe the step was too high for him. But he will be part of that short list where Arsenal want a young striker, centre forwards. I think Vlahovic could be on that list. I think Daka and Boadu were also monitored before they moved away from the former clubs. So he'd be on that list. It depends again on how much money it cost and things like that.
It's the same people who kind of said, oh, here's the Odegaard deal. Oh, look, I got Florentino's number, man.
Well, you know, it's easier if you use the same channels that have gotten you already some players, you know.
But what I'm wondering about, though, is I like the idea of relaunching a young player who's obviously a very talented player. It does mean you shut the door on Laka at this stage. Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, if you don't want to extend him or on your terms, then I guess so. The International Olympic Committee has let it be known that it's too oppressive, Arsene Wenger's plan for World Cup every 2 years. Are you surprised, Gab? Did I read that wrong?
Let me
read
opposes, that opposes.
Opposes.
Freudian. Oppresses is what they
say.
Yeah,
I know.
FIFA does to everybody else. Well, wait. Hang on. Let me think a second. Let's see. Your business is to go and sell sponsorships to a massive sporting event,
yeah,
which also involves football and actually draws big crowds,
yeah,
in the summer every 4 years.
Yeah.
Of course you're going to be opposed to another major event. I mean, this is very, very obvious. And to the International Olympic Committee, I would say, guys, first of all, leaving aside the whole history and whatever, and that your record is worse than FIFA's, and let's not even get into the, you know, the Brisbane World Cup, the Brisbane Olympics and how that was all done. Yeah, obviously these guys are going to go and defend their turf.
Yeah, of course.
That's frankly, what... I see no reason at all why football.
No, but
should
the IOC has nothing
people
to say anyway in what happens to the World Cup, right? So we're like,
no, they can just come out and yak.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think this decision, and by the way, we are getting closer, I think, to some sort of mediation. People are involved in this. It's right. It should involve, obviously, the confederations. UEFA have come out very strongly. CONMEBOL as well. Let them sort it out.
Yeah.
But you can't run your thing based on what the freaking IOC and, like, the freak show of members, Count so-and-so and Count Chocula and the princess, whatever the hell. You know, I honestly don't. No, but I know it's improved
know
a little.
So that-
but I always used to abuse myself looking at the list of IOC members. And, yes, the number of athletes has increased.
Yeah.
But the rest is a carnival of royal freaks, you know, and it still is. There's still a lot of people like that.
Is their president, who is German, in your good German guys or not so much?
No, he's not.
No, okay.
He's
fine.
Not. The only good thing about him is that you know,
I was just wondering.
He shares a name with a famous last name with a
course.
Famous composer.
Yeah.
Scary scenes from Nijmegen as a stand collapsed during celebrations by visiting fans from Vitesse Arnhem. Jules, this looked really awful on video.
Yeah.
Apparently, there were no injuries, but. Okay, I'm going to try to describe this, and you give me your thoughts, right? You see, I think they just won the game,
yeah,
right?
They won. It's a big game.
It's a big game for them.
It's a huge game.
They're in the stand. Now, admittedly, the stand is about, like, 1 meter off the ground,
yeah,
right? Like, it's not like it's a big
no
fall. But they're all jumping up and down. They're all bouncing, doing
with
the whole
players in front
West Brom, boing,
yeah,
boing. The players are in front of them. And then the whole thing collapses and it all falls and they keep bouncing.
Yeah, I know. It was incredible. They're clearly not fazed at all by that stand and potentially creating a huge accident.
Yeah.
And it's good that if there's no injuries and that's apparently...
We joke because it looked funny, but obviously it's serious.
It's really scary. It's an impressive video when you see the first time round. So good that there's no injuries. Good for Vitesse to have won that game, of course. And I think Nijmegen will have a bit of work to do on the stadium, of course. Atalanta warmed up nicely for their trip to Old Trafford in the Champions League in midweek. Beating Empoli 4-1, and Gab, Josip Ilicic is shining again. Oh, it's so good to see.
Yeah,
like
he scored
this.
Two goals. One of them an absolute peach of a
screamer
finish, the kind that he really only very few people can pull off.
Yeah.
Atalanta, because they had internationals going away and stuff, they mixed things up. It was actually a lot closer than the scoreline suggests. But yeah, they're on form and you know, they're not the kind of team you ever want to be facing in the Champions League.
True, although they lost Toloi, which they have a few...
Rafael Toloi is going to be, I think, a major concern for that trip.
Yeah.
Leipzig are held to a 1-1 draw by Freiburg. Fourth in the table, by the way.
Yeah.
More points dropped for Jesse Marsch.
Yeah, they can't defend.
Knives back out.
Still, and they could have scored more, of course, and they were at times good in this game, but you just can't rely on the defense. And maybe it's because you want to play too high, the high line. Maybe you want your centre-back to be so much involved with the ball as well that they're not switched on to defend. I don't know what the problem is, but that has to stop, because then you go and play PSG, and if you defend like that, you're going to concede a lot, like you did against City. And then in the league, it's not helping you either. So
I know it sounds like a horrible cliche, but obviously at Salzburg, when you have better players than everybody else and you just dominate everybody, it's difficult to switch that mindset. You want to continue being aggressive and dominating, but the reality is, there are many good teams in the Bundesliga.
Of course, exactly. We showed Real Sociedad some love earlier. How about some love for Sevilla too, Gab? Because they won a huge game away to Celta, not playing great either. And if they win the game in hand, they're top of the table too.
No, it was your boy Rafa Mir getting the winner. I thought this was important too, because you know they also had a bunch of guys who've been away.
Yeah.
They come back. It's really tight at the top of La Liga. I cannot emphasize this enough. You know, we're all talking about Clásico, this and that.
Yeah.
The reality is, even if Barcelona win all their games in hand, which I don't think they will, they still wouldn't be top of the table. Sevilla could be top of the table if they win their game in hand. Real Madrid could be top of the table. Atletico Madrid. It's wonderful. It's crazy. It is the tightest league in Europe this year. Great story from Belgium involving Union Saint-Gilloise, who I think get their first mention on the Gab and Jewel show, and a young man named Kaoru Mitoma.
Mitoma.
Japanese, yes.
Yeah, Japanese got a hat trick in their win this weekend. The top of the table in the Belgian league for newly promoted sides, level with Club Brugge, who are obviously the, you know, the who
came
the best
down
team.
From, what was it, 2-0 down at halftime? Yeah, he comes on in the second half?
Yeah, and he hasn't started the game. He's on loan from Brighton. Brighton bought him in the summer after he had a really good season.
Like they also bought
the
Union Saint-Gilloise, right?
But I don't know what the partnership is, but you know.
I'm pretty sure Tony Bloom owns both clubs.
He owns both clubs. So good for them. And, you know, certainly he's getting settling in Europe. Scoring that hat trick would be good for his. I'm told he was very good in the J-League. Not that I was the J-League, well, but last season was very good.
I don't
good.
Know either, but due to extensive sources, i.e. Wikipedia, tell me that it was interesting because he chose not to turn pro. He chose to go to university instead.
Yeah, I saw that too.
So, you know, seems like a good young man. Good
exactly. Turn. Yeah, I think we all saw that viral video of Erling Haaland training with the three balls balanced off top of each other and then hitting each of them in that top corner where you've got a little target. This is not real, right? Let's be honest, two people. And we're sorry to break your heart, but this is not real.
No. I'm not suggesting he's not capable of kicking it.
Of course.
I'm just suggesting he's not capable of balancing three footballs, one on top of the other, right? And the thing is,
even with Velcro on it,
It's a cool, even with Velcro, you can't do it. It's a cool video.
Yeah.
Not as cool as the Ronaldinho,
the
which
original,
was the original
of course.
Fake video. Right, that brings us to an end. But Jules, we got to come back on Thursday because there is so much going on. Not just the champions. We got to look ahead to the small match that we call El Clásico in La Liga. And if you're in the U.S., obviously, the only place to watch that is on ESPN. Plus, until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.